from all this Hare Krishna study today, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Samanitana, Namaste, Hare Guru, Hare Krishna. I can bring that another time. That'll make it easy. Can you plug both in at the same time? The two Jack. Hello. Welcome. Hello. Who are you?
Judy,
nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Burijan is my name. Is it Burijan? Burijan. Bur.
E.
E. Jan.
Burijan.
Close. Bur. E. Jan. Anyway.
Burijan.
Yeah, pretty good.
Nice to meet you.
And how did you get here? I mean.
With the beautiful Linda.
I know she doesn't drive. Did she carry you?
I'm sorry?
Did you drive her, Linda? Or did
I drive Linda.
Oh, okay. Yes. That's very kind of you also.
She kindly invited me.
And do you know anything about Hare Krishna or anything?
No, I don't.
Okay. If I don't start just at the beginning, don't mind. I'm sure you'll figure out parts of it.
I'm happy to. Just listen in.
Yeah, okay. Because we're reading some, sort of in the middle of a series of prayers by one very wonderful lady devotee of Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive. Krishna is the name of the Supreme Lord. So, Krishna as a person, but not a... In some senses, a person like we're people, because we're all people. We have natures, we have characteristics, we have personality. So Krishna is a person, but he's an unlimited person. So usually when we think of a person, or a person with a form or something, we would think that imposes a limitation, in the sense that if I'm sitting here, I'm not sitting over there. And if I'm sitting there, I'm not sitting here and there and there and there. But it's because we're not the Supreme Lord. But he has unlimited, inconceivable potencies and powers, and obviously not limited by what we're limited by. So Kunti Devi is a devotee. And her essential relationship with Krishna is like any great devotee. She has great love for the Supreme Lord. So when we think about love, when we think about the concept of God or something like that, or in Sanskrit, one of the words that for God is Ishvara, means the controller. So we usually, when we're not so clear about what our relationship with him, other than he's big and we're little, and we hope he's going to be there when we really need him, something like that. So Kunti Devi was in somewhat of a different situation, that she had been with Krishna, and Krishna had not her sons. Krishna had protected her sons when they were in the greatest difficulty. And now their difficulties had ended. She was a... She was the queen mother, and her sons had been unrightfully robbed of their kingdom. And because they were very pure-hearted, Krishna wanted to reinstate them in their proper positions because they're very pure-hearted. And it's good if the government is headed by pure-hearted people. So Krishna reinstated them, and there was a great battle, and after the battle was over, it was time for Krishna to be leaving. So in understanding the dealings between Krishna and his devotees, one of the main things to look for is how the different interactions bring different moods, and those moods are different varieties or shades of love. So we're all looking for love, we're starving for love, we can even say. And that Krishna, that God, the Supreme Lord, the Absolute Truth, is the is the object, the natural object of every living entity, every soul's love, is sort of the foundational principle that this book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is based on. And it's based on the concept that we are meant to reestablish our loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. So when we look at the different interactions between Krishna and his devotees, we look for how the loving relationship is being stimulated. So when one meets one's beloved, that brings a particular type of happiness. And when one has to leave one's beloved, that puts one in a different mood, but it's still in relationship with one's beloved. And then there's different varieties of exchanges also. So at this particular point, Krishna is about to leave Hastinapur, the place which is the capital city, more or less. And he's going back to his own city of Dwarka. And she's already offered quite a few prayers already. And in essence, what she's said is that the Supreme Absolute Truth is, there's no place where he is not situated, because he's omnipresent, omnipotent. There's no place where he is not. And there's nothing separate from him. So it's not... It's a very, very wonderful conception of what the Absolute Truth is, what God is, that there's nothing separate from him. Everything in existence is part of him, in the sense that it's his energy. Because by definition, practically speaking, there can be nothing separate from the Absolute Truth. But then, although his existence is everywhere, and although he's a person, because of our lack of relationship, we don't perceive him anywhere, although he's everywhere. So she's explained this, and she's explained in a very subtle way that the process of actually converting our ignorant state of consciousness, where we don't see him anywhere, to a blissful state of consciousness where we see him everywhere, which is actually reality, because again, there's no place where he is not. That process is called bhakti, and that means devotion, that means love. So she's explained that, and then she's explained how, and gave many, many examples, and how in previously, when her and her sons were sort of exiled in the forest, how Krishna protected them, and she gave 7 examples, I believe, of how he protected them in all these different circumstances. So then one naturally thinks, well, this is a proper relationship. This is the natural and proper relationship with God, with the Supreme Truth, that when I'm in some kind of difficulty, he's going to protect me. And it's sort of, in the Christian culture, it's more like God the Father. And in all the cultures born of that area, that's sort of his business in one sense, or the relationship. We take shelter of him, we pray to him, and he protects us. So Kunti Devi is saying that you protected us in all these different situations. But then she says, the protection from the calamities of life isn't what I really relish. What I really relish, what brings me the greatest happiness, which fills me, is that you're with us. You are with us, not that you protected us, but that you are with us all the time. And now you're leaving, and you're not going to be with us. So I would prefer the difficult situations, because you're with us. So this is really the nature of love. Because when one is with one's beloved, then every circumstance is wonderful. And when one is missing one's beloved, those same circumstances aren't wonderful in the same way. So she's saying that contrary to the way that people usually relate to the Supreme Lord, is that not to remove the calamities, the difficulties, as that's your purpose, as if that's the purpose of the Supreme Lord, to remove your difficulties, and that's the purpose of his existence, which obviously it isn't. But rather, she is saying that she prefers the difficulties because that brings her close to the Lord. Hare Krishna. Where is your darling son?
He's having tests, so he's preparing for tests.
Sounds like a calamity that she said to Madhav Krishna. He's having it so late at night, he's having a test? Or he's preparing for tomorrow's test?
Yeah, preparing for tomorrow's.
We're also preparing our test tomorrow. What's his test in? What subject?
Science and maths.
And then it's over after tomorrow?
Yeah.
But tomorrow's Friday the 13th.
Okay.
But don't
worry. He should be fine because he's good with maths and science.
That's great. But if it's any consolation, it's not only Friday the 13th for him, it's Friday the 13th for everyone. They don't have that superstition in India, do they?
No. In the West. Some people don't believe number 13 is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But specifically in the West, I don't know where it comes from, but Friday the 13th is supposed to be dangerous. Yes? Judy, isn't that true?
No. Not for me.
Not for you.
No, it's...
But you've heard that, of course.
I have heard that, yes.
You've heard that? Yes. You?
No.
And a little boy?
Maybe. In the future.
So in any case, Kunti Devi has said that she prefers being with him, even in a calamitous situation, than not being with him even if she is in the most wonderful situation, in a heavenly situation, where every dream is fulfilled because she's the queen mother at this point and her sons are in power and whatever, everything is there, all honor, all wealth, all power, everything is there. But that's not the taste that this great devotee has. This great devotee has the taste that the highest thing, the sweetest thing, the most wonderful thing is to be with the Supreme Lord, even if the situation is a calamitous situation, to be with Krishna. So then she begins another set of the prayers continue, and this particular section of prayers describes something about Krishna. She's explaining that ultimately you're a very inconceivable person, and that would be natural because he's unlimited. He's in the Sanskrit the word is achintya. He's inconceivably powerful. He's unlimitedly powerful. And our finite minds they cannot conceive of what unlimited is. And not only that his presence, his existence, resolves all contradictions. So we're going to attempt technology here. Let's see. We'll try pushing this button and see if anything happens. First, it's even turned on. Yes, there it is, a verse. This is Sanskrit, but in English letters. Because Sanskrit has a whole different set of letters, but this has been transliterated into English. So we can see the verse. So it's Manye Tvam Kalam Ishanam.
Manye Tvam Kalam Ishanam.
Anadi Nidanam Vibhum.
Anadi Nidanam Vibhum.
Samam Charantam Savatra.
Samam Charantam Savatra.
Bhutanam yan mita kali.
Bhutanam yan mita kali.
So in continuing her prayers and in describing Krishna, she's now in a particular section of her prayers where she describes the inconceivableness of Krishna. So this manye means of the mind. Or I consider, tvam you, kalam ishanam. So these are two characteristics of the Supreme Lord. Kala means time, the eternal time, and Ishana means the controller or the supreme. So she's describing an aspect, very, we can say, godlike aspects of the Supreme Lord, because when he's a person, there'll be always a tendency for us to think, well, I'm a person and he's the person, so he's the same as me, an ordinary person. But this person, Kunti Devi is saying, I consider you, O Lord, Kalam Ishwaram, that you are eternal time. And this will be described, this is described in other places too. But when we think about time, it is so powerful. It pushes, it's irrevocable, it's unstoppable, and it moves whether we forward from, we could say, from the past to the present to the future, although nowadays people like to consider just the present. But the present is what we live in, but certainly the present, and we could also say in one sense that the present is what we come from, because what was the past was previously the present. But in a practical sense, this time moves from the past to the present to the future, and it's relentless. It doesn't stop. It's unstoppable. We may find a particular point in our life or in the world that we think that's a perfect place and we want time to stop, but it never stops. Mm-hmm. Or we think that these times are so bad, I wish they would end. And they do end, because time is always moving forward. And especially when this is one of the characteristics of a child at this age, is that they don't have any concept of time, practically speaking. If how old is he now?
Two.
Probably. Two. And Raj at 12, 13 now, excuse me.
He's
14. 14, oh. So at 14, he has a much broader concept of time. But still, when one is 14 years old and you say, well, next year we'll do this, and next year, that appears to be an unlimited amount of time. Or when one is in school and one's always or in work or something, and we're looking at our watch, another how many more minutes? 20 minutes, 18 minutes, 16 minutes. It seems to be stretching out. But it's relentlessly moving forward, and it's unstoppable, and there's nothing we can do about it. And it's interesting, sometimes I ask people, how old do you feel inside? I'll ask you right now. How old do you feel inside?
25.
How old do you feel inside? You had a hard day at work today, probably. But you ask people, and usually they feel something either 16 or 22 or something like that. But yet, their body is continuously aging. It's changing. And there's nothing anyone can do about it. And then eventually, the body gets old and older and older and older. And then it's time to leave. So what is that force that's relentlessly pushing this world, that's unstoppable, that in one sense, it's the power of in the world, out of everyone's control, that's controlling everyone, but no one can control? That's Krishna's potency. So in one of our great teachers, Jiva Goswami, has explained that this is one of the potencies of the Lord in the heart, the Paramatma, this Kala Shakti, the Shakti of time. So it is him that's his energy manifest, and it's unstoppable. So these are some of the aspects of the Supreme Lord. Whether it's a good time or a bad time, it's moving forward. And then because he's eternal time, or his potency. Kunti Devi is recognizing that potency of him. Because you're eternal time, you're also time. I consider you time and Ishanam. You are the supreme controller. So Narada is he only the controller of time, but he's the controller of the creator, the annihilator of everything, and the controller. And time is in one sense, I think of it in terms of, like, say if you're cooking and you have a big pot full of your soup, and you're stirring it, and so there's different elements in existence, and time is that which stirs everything and moves everything forward to its completeness. So she's describing, even though she's seeing this person in front of her, this most beautiful, all attractive person, she's recognizing that he's not an ordinary person, but he's the Supreme Lord. And she wants his association. And then next, anadi nidanam. Anadi means you have no beginning and no end. Nidanam. You have no beginning, you have no end. And vibhum, that you are all-pervading or all-powerful. You are the Supreme Lord, you are all-pervading, you are all-powerful, and yet you are this all-attractive person. And then she moves this description to a different direction of him. Because if he, she says, I consider you to be eternal time, Ishanam, the supreme controller, Vibhum, all-powerful, Anadi Nidanam, having no beginning or an end. So therefore, someone may say that he, being the supreme controller, and the controller of even time, and all-powerful, that everything that happens wrong in this world is his fault, ultimately. And this is one of the major issues of especially Western theology, and they never really seemed to move beyond this particular question. They place it like this: if God is all powerful and if he's all good, why is there evil and distress and difficulty in this world? Because either he can't do something about it, that means he's not all-powerful, or he likes, for some reason, he permits all the bad things going on in this world, and therefore, what kind of a person is he? So therefore, he couldn't be all good. So this question, and that's how it's often phrased in this way, so that it puts the ultimate blame for all difficulty on the Supreme Lord. And from a very, very simplistic point of view, he makes time, he makes the good times go, makes the bad times come. He's all powerful, he has no beginning and no end, and he's the supreme controller. So one could come to those thoughts. But it is not a proper way to think, actually. And then so Kunti Devi explains this point in the next part of the verse. Does he cause all the problems in the world? But some people have such great luck, and they're born in such a wealthy family, perfectly healthy, and then other people are born in such difficulty, in such poverty, and some physical problems, and difficult parts of the world where there's difficulty. So he seems to be superficially favoring some people over others, and giving some people who, for some reason or another, he likes a good situation, and giving people that he doesn't like, or for some reason or another, a difficult situation. So this isn't actually a fact, because, and she'll explain why in a moment, but this is taking our consciousness with its limited vision, limited to understanding what is good and what is bad, just like a child. A child maybe doesn't want to go to school. I know one 14-year-old boy who always says, oh, I only like vacations and I don't like to go to school, although he does very, very well in school. But he says that. But why do his parents insist that he goes to school? It's because they know that this ultimately is what is required for him to have a good life, a successful life. So his vision, without a proper conception of time and without without seeing life in perspective of 50 years or 70 years or 80 years, his vision is playing is the most important thing. But the parents, because they are more mature, they have a means to have a greater perspective of life, they know that, no, you have to do this, and later on you'll understand. So it's really the same thing. It's a thinking that everything is the fault of the Supreme Lord, because he's all-powerful, and we're not so sure if he's all good or not, but by definition, he's, in Sanskrit, the word is param satyam. That means that everything he does, by definition, is good. By his touch, everything is good. And even if it's superficial externally, seems that it's unfavorable, ultimately, from the perspective of eternity, from the adult's perspective, and this is one of the most, one of the differences between how we view things and how a great soul, what to speak of the Supreme Lord, how he views everything, is that that the viewpoint is from one of eternity. And what's good and what's bad, what's favorable and what's unfavorable, what's fortunate and unfortunate, is in a completely different perspective when viewed from the point of eternity, as viewed from the point of, like a child viewing, if I could play today instead of going to school, this would be very, very good. Or we think, sometimes I think of, if I made a movie of my life, and now that movie would, if it was real time, it would last 69 years. But if I sped that up, that movie, so that whole 69 years would be played in 3 minutes, then that time when I was maybe 9 years old and I was playing baseball and I really did really well, how long would that last in that three-minute movie of my life? Or when I got my driver's license for the first time when I was 17 and I was so happy. And how, that's not even like that. And then what to speak of when something unfortunate happened. I broke my leg or something like that, and for 3 months it was in a cast or something like that, and that 3 months goes like the flicker of the eye only. So it's, and or if I won the lottery, which I never did, and then whatever happened, you know, or I got a raise, or I moved to this position, or I got a new car, or I lost the new car, or this or that. It all appears from the point of view of eternity, what to speak of 69 years, it all appears completely insignificant. So that is one great difference, because time is eternal. The Lord is Kalam. He's eternal time, and he has no beginning, and he has no end. And we also have no beginning, and we have no end. Our situation, this movie of my life, will last, I don't know how many years, but 69 at least. But then, when this movie ends, then the eternal soul, who was really me, who was not this body, it moves to another situation, and then to another, and then to another, and then to another, and then to another. So what is good and what is bad is different depending upon the perspective it is viewed. So one of the perspectives that differentiates between the way great souls view things and the way souls who are trapped into very small-mindedness views things is their time perspective. When things are viewed from the point of view of eternity, everything looks different. What is to be gained is something completely different when viewed for just as if this life or 10 years was a long time or 30 years is a long time, or this life is everything. So that's one answer, one way of looking at this question of why there is evil or difficulty or in this world, because they're, from the point of view of eternity, our stay in this world, in this situation, it has a purpose, and the superficial gains and the superficial losses have nothing to do with the purpose of who we are actually are eternally. So then she explains why good things happen to some people and bad things happen to others. Samam charantam savatra bhutanam yan mita kali. Kali there means dissension. Or the difficulties, or rather, samam charantam savatra means that Krishna is equally samam. He's equal to everyone. Even though when we look around the room, or if we look in the thousands of houses or in Perth, we see no one who looks exactly the same as another. And every person has different tastes, and every person has different desires. And we're such individuals, but yet it is Krishna distributing his mercy equally to everyone. Samam charantam, savatra, everywhere, equally merciful. Equally distributing his mercy to everyone. Bhutanam yan mitakali, and the difficulties that arrive, the dissensions and the difficulties that arise, come from the interactions, bhutanam, between the living beings. So in other words, we have, even though the Krishna is the supreme controller, he doesn't create the individual destinies. He doesn't impose the individual destinies that each one of us have to carry in our life. That is a result of our karma or our interactions with different people and with the material world in the past and in the present. So I find that even though this is one of the primary school concepts from the Bhagavad Gita, from Krishna consciousness, that we have our karma, we have our fate, we are eternal souls, but yet we are in a material situation, in a material body, and we all have our own fate to meet. And the cause of our fate is the actions that we have performed in this and in other lives, previous lives. So that immediately, that concept that my situation that I'm in is my karma, it's my fate, it's different from anyone else's. That concept immediately places the responsibility of how one acts in one's life. Now, if my situation at the present is caused by my previous actions, that means my future situation is going to be dictated by how I act now and how I've acted in the past. So immediately that puts the weight of responsibility on a person for how they act now. And then how should we deal with our fate that we all carry with us? And everyone's fate is mixed. No one has only good things happen to them. And similarly, practically speaking, there's no one has only bad things that happen to them. Everyone's fate is mixed. Some people have more difficulties than others. Some people have more happiness than others. But everyone has difficulty. And the difficulties come to them unwanted. And everyone has happiness. And even though we think we're creating our happiness comes to us in a similar way. As difficulties come, so happiness comes without our making them happen. So it's such a wonderful concept of life. And an example that we give in Krishna's relationship with our fate, with our karma, and how he's equal to everyone. One example that we give to understand this is a person who has committed a crime, and they're brought to the judge, and the judge sentences them to 2 years in prison, for example. So then, when he's in prison, the prisoners may ask each other, "Why are you here?" Now, if his answer is, "Because the judge sent me here," then there's very little hope that he's going to rectify and stop performing the criminal activities that has caused him to be there. If he said, "The reason why I'm here is because I stole this and I did this and I cheated in this way and I've done this, and therefore I'm here," then naturally the next thought will be, I'm going to really make sure I don't do these things again because I don't like it in prison at all. I don't like the difficulties that come along with prison life. But as long as his mood is, well, it's just, it's the judge's, because the judge is just, he's just applying the law. So he isn't the one that puts us in this. There's the law, just as there are laws of state, there's the laws of material existence. And how we act or interact in the material world with each other, with the objects of the material world, this is going to affect our fate, our fortune. So, very interesting concept. So here's Prabhupada's translation of this verse. Madhuraman, why don't you read it out loud, please?
"My Lord, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse."
Just the interactions between, you'd say as a general statement, different people. Everyone in this world is very self-centered. So the dissensions arise because of the self-centeredness and the interactions within that frame of reference of self-centeredness. And that causes the karma from which we enjoy or suffer from. So here's Prabhupada's purport. I'll read it. Kunti Devi knew that Krishna was neither her nephew nor an ordinary family member of her paternal house, because externally that was Krishna's situation. She knew perfectly well that Krishna is the primeval Lord who lives in everyone's heart as the Supersoul, Paramatma. Another name of the Paramatma feature of the Lord is Kala, or eternal time. Eternal time is the witness of all our actions, good and bad, and thus resultant reactions are destined by him. So time witnesses all we do, and time in that sense causes our destiny, future destiny, because of our actions. It is no use saying that we do not know why and for what we are suffering. We may forget the misdeed for which we may suffer at this present moment, but we must remember that Paramatma, the Supersoul, the Lord in the heart, is our constant companion, and therefore he knows everything, past, present, and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, he is the supreme controller also. Without his sanction, not a blade of grass can move. The living beings are given as much freedom as they deserve, and misuse of that freedom is the cause of suffering. Just in the same way that misuse of a citizen's freedom, because the citizen has the freedom to follow the law or not follow the law, so misusing that freedom causes him to suffer a prison existence. So similarly, the living entities are given as much freedom as they deserve, and misuse of that freedom is the cause of suffering. The devotees of the Lord do not misuse their freedom because the free condition, the natural condition of every living entity, every soul, is to be in relationship with Krishna. To be devoted to the Supreme Absolute Truth, to be devoted to Krishna. That's the natural position of everyone. And therefore, because being devoted to the Lord defines what it means to be a devotee, and that is the proper use of freedom, and therefore they're the good sons of the Lord. Others who misuse freedom are put into miseries destined by eternal kala, eternal time. The kala offers the conditioned souls both happiness and miseries. It is all predestined by eternal time. As we have miseries uncalled for, so we may have happiness also without being asked, for they are predestined by kala. No one is either an enemy or a friend of the Lord. Everyone is suffering and enjoying the results of his own destiny. This destiny is made by the living beings in the course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over the material nature, and thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and therefore he can see everyone's activities. And because the Lord has no beginning or end, he is known also as the eternal time, kala. So a very, very interesting topic. Any questions on anything we spoke about or from the verse or purport? Because theoretically, you can even say philosophically, it's easy to accept the principle. But then when something happens to one in a practical sense in one's life that one doesn't like, then immediately all the philosophy tends to go out the window. And we think, why does this happen to me? Why did this happen to me? And blaming everyone else. But actually, we have our fate to meet. And if we can master this simple art of meeting our fate and acting practically, of course, but meeting our fate and depending on Krishna and acting in such a way that that Krishna will be pleased as we meet our fate, responding to it in a proper way, then we naturally learn what we have to learn in life. Any questions? Yeah.
When things are unfavorable or something happens opposite to our desire.
Okay, first of all, unfavorable, before you even ask the question, this is such a strong tendency to say what's unfavorable are things that are not according to our desire. But that's not always the truth, that something unfavorable is not according to our desire, because it depends on what we understand, what, how much knowledge we have. Like a child, again, thinks that eating candy all day is unfavorable because they desire to eat. They think eating candy is desirable, and when the mother doesn't allow them to eat candy all day long, they think that's unfavorable. You know, this is obviously a simple example. But because of lack of knowledge of what is actually favorable or unfavorable, they can't really make a proper decision. So as they mature and become educated as to what is favorable, what is unfavorable, then when they have that kind of knowledge, only then is it proper to make, then are they capable of making wise decisions. So before anyone can make a wise decision and say that something is favorable or unfavorable because it fulfills or doesn't fulfill my desire, the desire actually has to be one that's based on knowledge, on proper knowledge, and from the perspective of eternity, really. Anyway, I just derailed your question to some degree, but what were you going to say?
If when we're in a difficult situation,
yes,
it is philosophy is yes that we should see that this is Krishna's mercy, but it's very hard to
yes.
see that way. So, and I've noticed with myself that at that time, even chanting or doing any spiritual activity is that much difficult.
Yes.
So, how can we overcome?
Well, the first step is that we remember what Kunti Devi is, that she's preferring the difficulties because of the dependence, because she and the Pandavas are all devotees. That means Gotripte Sharanam Braja. That means that they have full dependence on Krishna. That's actually what it means to be a devotee, fully dependent on Krishna. One acts in a practical way, but one doesn't depend on one's practical activities. One depends on Krishna for the result. So this is what it means to be a devotee. We see this very high standard set by Kunti Devi, the Pandavas, and so many exalted devotees. And then we look at ourselves, and we see this standard, and we see that I am so far from that standard. So that's one of the first steps that has to come to one if one wants to advance spiritually. One has to become humble. So your question was, how does one advance? And the first step is one has to see that one is not so advanced. And one becomes humble in that way. And then when one's humble, then it's so much easier to actually depend on Krishna, because the opposite of humility is pride. So when one is proud, the last thing one wants to do is take help from another. When one is humble, one will take help from anyone, wherever it comes from. So that's the first step. And then, although the mind really doesn't want to take shelter of Krishna or chant or anything like that, because it's frantic, it doesn't know what to do, it's disturbed. But when one is humble, one knows that I must do this whether I like it or not, whether my mind likes it or not, and then one prayerfully takes chants, and then one is going very, very strongly in the right direction. So two-step process, we could say, or three. First step is become conscious, understand what the ideal is, what the proper standard of devotion is. And then first you have to have that knowledge, and then become conscious of oneself, introspective, and see how one is reacting and applying Krishna consciousness in one's life. And then the result, natural result of that will be humility. And then humility allows us to take shelter. Is that right? Any other good question? Any other questions? Yeah.
Sorry. I was just thinking, in the case of Queen Kunti, although all these hard difficulties coming on her, so is it true to say that no matter how hard you try to control your action, whatever karma you have to go through, it's going to happen anyway? Or you can just refine or control your action and get better results? It was meant to be like that.
Sometimes we don't know until we try to refine. Like, say if you're ill, so you may go to the best of doctors, the most expensive specialists.
That's right.
And you say, please fix me, or fix my beloved mother. Can you guarantee that? Now, what doctor will say, yes, I can guarantee that I'll cure? Person, no. Yeah, I've seen on homeopathic doctors' name cards, you know, what do they call them?
Calling
card, huh?
Visiting card?
Something, yeah.
Name plaque?
No.
Business card.
Somehow I remember the Japanese word for it, but I couldn't remember the English. It's meishi. On homeopathic, I've seen the saying that we prescribe, God heals. or he doesn't heal. That's the other side of it. So no one, so our duty, we have to do our part, and that is to act in such a practical way. But our practical way of acting, no matter who we are, no matter how powerful we are, no matter how much ability we have, no matter how much money, influence, and intelligence we have, or power we have, doesn't guarantee that the result is going to come that we hoped for, that we desired. But nor do we know that that getting our desire the way that we want it to is actually the best thing for us. We use our intelligence and our experience and our common sense as best as we can, but we don't have our viewpoint of what's best for us. You know, it's very limited. And there's that saying in English, failure is the pillar of success. So, and if someone goes through their life, no one wants failure, but if someone goes through their life, you know, just everything works properly, they're intolerable people to be with.
The hard way.
Huh?
Going through the hard way all the time.
Well, yeah, generally people have a mixture. Mm. In Kali Yuga, in this age, it's a difficult time because just the general atmosphere is one of difficulty and suffering. No one really has it easy. Even though we see people like to present themselves as, I have the ideal life, you know, the ideal life, the ideal family, the ideal house. But it's generally quite, it's just a show. It's just the externals. And time tends to show that, you know, people idealize the Hollywood movie stars or the sports figures or something, but how many of them actually have happy lives? So the things that we consider fortunate and favorable and according to our desire, and we wish the whole universe would align itself to fulfill our desire, may not be actually what's the best thing for us either. So what we do is we try our best according to our intelligence, according to the knowledge that we gather, according to, we try to have our absolute reference points, what's good and what's bad, what's favorable, what's unfavorable. And we try our best, and then we place ourselves in the hands of Krishna. That's the way devotees act. But it sounds simple. But of course, you know, so many shades and decisions that have to be made. So we try our best and depend on Krishna. So that dependence on Krishna, in one sense, is the main point that has to be cultivated. The very nature of being in the material world is that it's fearful to depend on someone, because experience shows that we're let down. So we want to, everyone is looking for independence. Independence means, what does it mean to be independent? It means to have, you know, money and power, etc. So you can, but ultimately no one is independent. So we're dependent for the air we breathe, for the, you know, a billion things we're dependent on. You know, we're not even conscious that our heart is beating. And we go along thinking that I'm the one doing everything until something breaks in our body or doesn't work, and suddenly we realize, wait a second, this is very frightening. I'm not used to this. I want to be in control. I don't like to be dependent. So it's very, very frightening. One could say it's terrifying, even if something extreme is happening. When we're young and the body is working, you know, smoothly and moving, running, everything is effortless. But as one ages, everything is difficult, and you get used to it, and you think, well, it could be worse, but generally it will be worse. It's just a matter of before the next part breaks or something like that. But the concept is that we are dependent at every moment, and we don't like to cultivate a mood of dependence, because we have an inherent understanding that it's a dangerous position to be dependent in this world. But we are dependent, but we want to become dependent on Krishna, and then the question is, well, how do you how do you develop that kind of trust, that kind of faith, that it's real and everything, when you can't do it unless there's practice, and unless you do something for Krishna in his service and start chanting and start depending upon him in his, and try to serve and depend on him. And it takes, but we want it the other way generally. First, you give me the faith and show me. First, you show yourself, and then I'll trust. Are you okay?
Sorry, no, I just had to move.
Yeah, yeah, it's a long sitting in one place.
Sorry.
No. You're probably not used to sitting in one place for so long either.
Yeah.
I'm finding the same problem too. I'm just like trying to shift my legs and this and that. Yes, just like we were talking about. It's true. Just to make the point. So that's why it's frightening. It's actually very frightening up to the point of, and then at the last moments of our life, you know, it goes beyond frightening to terrifying, because we don't know, you know, everything that we've depended upon in our life is suddenly not there anymore. Whether it's even breathing, you know, we all take breathing for granted, or whatever strength we had. I was once talking to this one devotee in Vrindavan who was near the end of her life, and she told me that if you touch her like this, there's so much pain, and it was inconceivable. And she told me that when her husband had passed away, he had told her that, and she couldn't understand it. But now she understands it. So how fragile our situation is. So if we don't learn how to deal with this, deal with reality while we're young, and have our wits about us, etc., and we have some mobility, it's so difficult to do when one's older. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says, "Komarama charet pragyo daman bhagavataniha." From as soon as we become conscious of what reality is, as young as practical, we should live our life with that intelligence. Otherwise, you know, it's quite a shock, because the mind, like just like you were saying to me, when a difficulty, there's the philosophy, and then when something happens, the mind just doesn't want to hear philosophy. The mind just grabs onto something, and usually it grabs onto anxiety or fear, and that's the mind holds on to these things, and then you say, but in the Bhagavad Gita it says, the mind doesn't. So it takes practice in life. We hear classes, you know, I speak the classes, but it takes practice in life. That means taking the philosophical points home and then saying, yeah, let me see how I'm going to do with this today. Did you have a question?
You were mentioning that when we want something, then we expect that the whole universe should align.
I like to say that one. I like the, it doesn't happen, does it, generally?
Actually, that's the question I was having, that there's a line of philosophy, a line of thought which says when you want something, then you just think and you meditate on it, and then it will happen. And there's a book also, The Secret.
Yes, yes.
And I had actually read that book before I came into Krishna consciousness. I was trying.
But then there's the books after that. It says, why the secret doesn't work for you.
But there are so many people who believe it works, and they really believe in it. So I wonder how it works for them.
Especially the Bollywood movies, they have used this phrase many times, that if you desire something very intensely or intently, then the whole universe will work to get you that thing.
Okay.
Respond.
Yeah. Okay. So, and therefore, because and if you're not wealthy enough, or if you don't have the perfect wife or husband, or the perfect car, it means the reason is because you didn't desire it enough. Yeah? So, just for example. for example, say someone wants to be the president of the United States, and there are people who do want to. But say if everyone in the whole country wanted to be the president, but there only could be one president. So is it going to be naturally the person who desires it the most, necessarily? So desire is a factor. And do you know anyone who, you know, there's a saying that I heard, I think it actually I heard it from, of all people, Steve Jobs. Everyone wants to go to heaven, but no one is ready to die to get there. Mm-hmm. No one is willing to die to get there. Mm-hmm. You follow what I mean? It's clever. Yeah, you want to go to heaven, but no one wants to die to get there. So no one wants to die is the point. And do you know, and everyone really strongly desires not to die, right? With their full intent. But does that work for anyone? What, to speak of one person? Is there anyone who doesn't have to go through this? Is it because of desire? So desire is a factor, in fact, because unless you desire to study, to get a PhD, unless that's a, you won't, there's no question of you being able to do it. If you have no desire to do it, you're not going to put in the work. But it is not the only factor. What do you think?
I don't know. There are some people who claim that it works for this. I was wondering how.
But because they desired something and then they got it.
Yeah.
Okay, but does that mean that everyone who desires that is going to get it? Or is that maybe there are other factors involved too? So if you look at it from a scientific point of view, how are you going to prove this with a double-blind experiment? You have to line up all those people who are, and they all have to desire. Then you have to have a desire meter. How many hours a day are you desiring it? And then we'll actually see. And they actually claim to use quantum physics to prove this point. But on the other side, where it's really true, that if you fully desire to love Krishna, that he will reciprocate with that desire because he's waiting there. Tatraloyam apimulam ekalam. That is the one price. Krishna bhakti rasato bhavato mati kriyatam yari buddhi chayachate. Tatraloyam apimulam ekalam janmakoti sukritar na labhyate. That's the one price, because you have to deal with your fate when you desire something, and you also have to deal with so many other people's desires too, because there's only so many mangoes on the tree. But when you're dealing with desiring in relationship to Krishna and wanting to be with him and to have a develop your loving relationship with him, then that point's actually true, because he reciprocates with us according to our desires. Prabhupada actually said something like this here. Living beings are given as much freedom as they deserve. So desire and deserve are both in there. Like if you desire to fly, and really desire to fly without a plane or a balloon, just you don't have the proper money to be able to do that. But interesting. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
This reminded me of something that I remember. That there was a famous sportsman.
Yeah.
He was idolized by many. And actually, he was a cricket player. And he got diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
So he was interviewed. And he said, "We're going to put on the boxing gloves and fight this one." And 2 months later, he was dead.
He lost. He lost. Yeah.
But he was, that statement, if it also put him, was this, the attitude that he was showing.
Yeah.
And it gave people heart to hear him say that.
On the other side of this one, if people give up hope, then they don't live in difficult situations. So the will and the desire to go on is a factor.
Yeah. I saw that when I was seriously injured and in hospital, that for some people it was confusing when they were told, just make sure you're in the right frame of mind and things will happen. Because that was certainly important, but it wasn't the only factor.
Yeah. What do you think?
In our case, the hope has to be that Krishna will do the best for me, rather than thinking.
So if you think like that and try your best to do what you think is most pleasing for Krishna in the circumstances, and then you'll be free from all anxiety in your life if you have that kind of trust in Krishna.
Is that the same as a feeling of accepting, you know, what happens to you?
I'd say conditional, yes. Yeah, you accept. Yeah, there's acceptance is tolerance. Mm-hmm. Tolerance is very important, but you have to know when to tolerate and when to move forward also. And that takes some intelligence. So that rule is there, but everything has to be applied with intelligence and knowledge and knowing the way forward. Because if you decide to be tolerant, and you're in, have you been in Bombay? Have you rode one of the trains in Bombay?
Yeah, I did.
You did. Yeah. If you're going to be patient and tolerant, you'll never get on the train, or you'll never get off the train. So you have to know when to apply what principle. So the principles are very important to understand that, but one also needs a lot of common sense. And one has to really know what one's service is, what one's goal is, what one's trying to accomplish. Say if failure sometimes is the pillar of success, but that means you have to keep trying. But without tolerance, the main point about tolerance, Mahaprabhu says this in Trinadapi Sunichena Torodapi Sihisana. You know that verse? From the Shikshastakam. He says that one has to become more humble than the blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree. Otherwise, but he doesn't say it directly, but otherwise you're not going to be able to focus your mind on the holy names when you chant. Because your mind's always going to be disturbed. If you're not tolerant, you're always trying to fix everything that you think is not correct. So, yeah, the principles. So to take a principle, so you have to learn all the principles, like a doctor has to read so many books and learn all the principles of medicine. But then by experience and by intelligence, he has to know when to apply which principle. There's a story that Prabhupada once told about that there was this one veterinarian, and he had an assistant. So someone brought in his horse, and the horse had a big, big lump in his throat. So the veterinarian looked at it, and then he took a hammer and whacked it, and the horse went, and it was gone. And then, as you would imagine, then the veterinarian had to go somewhere, outpatient work. So he went somewhere, and the assistant was there, and someone came in with a horse at that time, and then the horse had a lump in his throat. So he said, I know how to deal with this. So he took a hammer and whacked it, and the horse died. So of course, when the veterinarian came back, he was furious. Why did you do that? He said, well, I saw you did it. And then the veterinarian says, but when I did it, the horse had swallowed an apple. And when you did it, he had a tumor. So there's that saying, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So therefore, when one is making important decisions, one, even though one may have a lot of knowledge and have experience, it's good to consult. Get confirmation that this is a good way to act with trusted superiors or close friends or something. Any other questions? Oh, it's 8 already. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Interesting. Tomorrow, the next class, the topic will be similar, and then it moves.